Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. This week we're getting stuck into Google snooping, Red Dead 2, and 20 years of the iMac. And to help me do that, I'm joined by Macworld editor Karen Khan.
Hi.
TechWorld editor Charlotte G.
Good morning.
And the games editor at TechAdvisor, Lewis Painter.
Hello.
Let's get on with the show. So, Charlotte G.
Yep.
Google, what they've been up to this time?
Google's been quite naughty. So on Monday, it emerged that if you tell Google to stop tracking your location, it doesn't stop tracking your location. Like, that's the simplest way that I can really put this.
That seems a little bit muggy.
Yeah, it does. It does. There are ways to get around this, but it requires quite a lot of intervention on the user's part. Like, you think you can just press location off and then Google doesn't track you. That's not the case.
Okay.
It's basically a bit more complicated than that. It's a tough one because there isn't a huge amount you can say other than Google is tracking you even when you don't want it to. But I guess the wider point is perhaps around companies sort of basically enacting some form of surveillance.
Well, I find it very insane that there was like a little like clicky button, like slider button, which would say turn off location services. And we all did that a couple of years ago. And then two years later, we find out that that didn't do anything.
I actually think it's absolutely scandalous. Like, I mean, as in you should have some expectation that if you're being told that you have an option to opt out of something, that when you are talked out of it, that is respected.
Yeah.
It shows quite a lot of contempt for your users. People do like to say, well, what were you expecting? It's free. But I'm not sure that I entirely buy the it's free, therefore you can just track everything I do and lie to me. Yeah.
So what actually happened when you turned off location services and what do they keep tracking? Because I'm sure there's a slight amount of nuance here.
There is. I wish that I'd done a little bit more preparation before we had this conversation. Essentially, it's around turning off your location history. People kind of thought that you can delete that, but it turns out Google still keeps a record of it.
Fine.
I haven't got much more to say.
So I'm guessing they're basically not... They're going to pretend like they're not tracking your location, but actually they're just storing it all on a server.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that how they're getting around it? Is that how they're framing it then? We're not actually tracking you.
Yeah. I mean, well, they definitely are, though. I think part of the issue as well is that there are ways to track you that aren't just using Google location services.
Yeah.
In reality, if you own a smartphone, you can be tracked at any point. Yeah, that's just the reality of it. I mean, you can use like cell phone masks to track people. Like, there are a lot of different ways. But I think it's more
like in Serial.
Yes. Or in Spooks.
There was a whole hour and 20, I think, in Serial where they talked about triangulating telephone masks.
Yes. Yes.
That thrilling podcast listening.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But it's an interesting one. Google has, so this story kind of broke on Monday, and Google has responded, but it's kind of responded by saying, like, we're going to make this clearer rather than we're going to actually change what we're doing. So Google relies on people either not caring or just being quite lazy about their privacy, essentially. And you know, people complain about these things and get scandalized, but then they don't really do anything about it.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say is, like, this, for something that seems quite scandalous, hasn't really got caught national headlines. No. I mean, obviously the tech press are writing about it and sort of feigning disgust, but I haven't seen I haven't seen Google get in front of it. They don't seem particularly interested in responding to
it. I think they're just going to wait for it to blow over. I think, to be honest with you, I find it all slightly baffling, kind of the hierarchy of what becomes an outrage and what doesn't. Because to me, this is potentially, I don't know if it's as scandalous as Cambridge Analytica. Perhaps people don't have the sort of idea around meddling in elections or whatever. But to me, this is actually the same principle to an extent, which is people nicking your data or tracking you without your consent.
Well, it comes down to breach of trust again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that was what everyone's issue with the Cambridge Analytica thing was, that they were, you know, doing these quizzes or whatever under good faith, and then that was being abused for reasons that they didn't originally sign up for. And I'm guessing Google are using this to advertise or to, you know, build up a picture of you as a consumer, and then using that for monetary gain. So it is, again, sort of a breach of trust.
Absolutely. And I think I personally think it's kind of gone a bit too far, really, because I've been prompted to switch this off because I got sick of Google noticing that I was at a restaurant asking my opinions about it, asking if am I at this train station? Do you want to know when they go? And it's just a little bit too much. I mean, in a way, it's good because it reminds you that you are being essentially tracked by Google. But on the other hand, it's there's a fine line between helpful and creepy.
Yeah.
And I think that perhaps there's a slight nuance as well between the US and the European market, at least from what I understand. Europeans tend to be, I mean, this is a huge generalisation, tend to be a little bit less keen on that, whereas I think people in the US are a little bit more relaxed about the concept of being tracked. I don't know.
Yeah, and...
What do you think, Karen?
I really don't know. I mean, maybe the press here tends to be a bit more sort of, you know, investigative about that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. What about you, Lewis? Do you think will it change what you do with your
account? I mean, I've kind of accepted that our technological overlords will always be watching us and tracking us and stuff like that. But at the same time, if you do turn off your location services, they should be turned off. Like, it should be universal, and there should be no way that they'll be able to track you.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like such a basic principle.
Yeah.
Just like if you've told someone, I don't consent to you doing that, and then they are still doing it, they're doing something against your consent.
They're taking the Apple way of doing things. Like, with Apple in one of the recent updates, you can toggle on and off your Bluetooth and Wi-Fi from this little swipe-up menu, but it doesn't actually turn off your Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. It just stops it from connecting. And it's just like...
Until the next morning when it comes up.
Yeah, a little bit of a tangent
there, but... It was the same kind of principle, isn't it, I guess? It's a hard one because it feels so... I know what you mean about like accepting it. It feels so kind of futile in a way, getting annoyed about the stuff, because you just think you can end up feeling completely helpless. And I do really admire people who take a strong stance on this and actually are very privacy savvy.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, I look at the extent that they have to go to just to maintain some kind of security.
Yeah.
And there's no getting around it. It is a big faff.
Yeah,
like using constant two-factor authentication, or, you know, encrypting everything using VPNs. It is a bit more of a faff, but then, you know, maybe the trade-off is worth it. Maybe we should all be doing that.
It doesn't particularly surprise me that Lewis, the person that had, I think, 140 apps authorized by Facebook.
It was like 240.
Yeah. Lewis is relaxed at best about his data privacy.
Lewis is very much accepted that these services are going to access his data.
I think I've just accepted, like, I've accepted that they'll take that data and try to use it against me, but I acknowledge where they use it, and I will kind of go against it. I'm like, oh, well, you've seen me look for something, and now you're serving it up as an ad. I'm not going to click on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing I find most pressing is when you look through your Google history and you look at all the like YouTube videos that you listened to when you were like slightly drunk and sad that one day. It's like, you should listen to George Michael 10 times.
Well, the Google Assistant recordings that they store.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole other kettle of fish, kind of getting into kind of voice assistants and but I mean that's perhaps for another podcast, because
tech is just murky in general.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
Well, all of that stuff does get stored on a server, and it's in your terms of
agreement. I get very tinfoil hat about the whole voice assistant thing.
Yeah, and I get very there is no tinfoil hat conspiracy about voice assistants.
I know. Do you know, it is a hard one. Like, I've been with a number of mates where people believe basically that Facebook listens to you and then serves you ads based on your conversation.
People genuinely believe this.
And actually, but I completely get where they're coming from.
I understand.
Because sometimes it is totally uncanny, and you do look at it and think, how on earth did you, like, for as an anecdotal example, like Dan mentioned the word Birra Moretti in a conversation and then saw a Facebook advert for that about 5 minutes later.
I think that's just a psychological trick.
No, it is. I know.
He fits the bill.
I sincerely doubt that Facebook is actually doing this, but I do understand why people get
like when you buy a new car and then everywhere you look is the same car.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's because it's entered your kind of consciousness. So it's
So when you learn a new word as well, you'll see that word being everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of just human psychology, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I think that although Facebook aren't doing that, I don't know, voice assistance is one that I'm not sure about. The whole thing where it recorded the conversation between two people and then emailed it to one of their friends.
Yeah.
I was like, that might be a glitch, but it's a pretty big glitch.
Yeah.
I mean,
if we've got an Alexa at home and it does keep just coming on random times, and you're like, did I just say something to make
I saw a great tweet yesterday that was like, things that Alexa doesn't pick up, me standing 2 feet away saying very clearly, Alexa, things that Alexa does pick up, the tap being turned on.
Yeah.
Like, the weirdest things just set it off. And there's like, there's an advert on TV at the moment where one of the characters in the advert is called Alex, and that always sets her off.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm actually, funny enough, going to meet a woman who is on the team that developed Alexa. So I'm going to have a chat with her and be like, look, can I just clarify all of these things? Because I'm
She thinks
curious.
You're going for a nice friendly drink, but actually you're there to do QA.
I'm totally there for journalistic
feedback.
Purposes. Like, yeah, there's no way around it.
To get back onto Google, quickly, I think we maybe should have been a little bit more aware of this when we logged into Google Maps and it knew where we were, even when we turned off our location settings. I feel like that should have been the giveaway.
I think in a way, people deep down often know these things are happening, but almost choose not to think about it because it's actually, it's easier to just kind of think, oh, okay, like that might be happening. But because when you actually confront the scale of kind of what, there's a guy on Twitter called Aral Balkan who calls this like surveillance capitalism. When you actually step back and you look at the whole like sausage factory, it can be a bit overwhelming where you're like, okay. So in a way, it's easier to just be like, oh, okay, that's weird. I'm just going to not look at that or investigate it any further. We all want to live in a bit of a denial about these things sometimes.
We talk about privacy on this podcast a lot, and often it boils down to, okay, we're going to get sort of up on our like high horse about it, but then actually it won't ever change people because of what you said earlier. The alternative is a bit of a faff. But I honestly, if you're... I just think it simply comes down to if you feign to care about your privacy, don't use Google, use Facebook. Like these companies are built on tracking you and knowing lots about you, and like anyone who has the slightest amount of knowledge about these things knows that. So if you do that, don't use a Google browser, don't use Google Maps, like don't use a Google phone.
We need to write a how-to about how to become anonymous, don't we?
Yeah,
for all the criminals out there.
I think we might actually have that.
We've got loads of that.
I think we might have that. Do you know what though? Like I completely agree with you, Scott. I think that what it boils down to is if you do care about this, there is no way around it. You just can't be using those services because they're entirely predicated on your data.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you turn off or what you pretend to like not allow access to. There's still going to be some data access and some sort of tracking going on. So.
I mean, this is where I guess Apple often claim the moral high ground. Around sort of privacy, because I think there's a general perception that Apple's a lot more careful. Like its business model isn't based on data; it's based on people buying
and
its things.
They will keep reiterating that. You know, Tim Cook's always out there saying, we don't do anything with this data.
Yeah. But you know, I think it's a bit of a selling point because I've actually used both iOS and Android at different points, but I'm actually starting to wonder whether I'm going to go back to Apple. So perhaps that privacy point is hitting home because there's a bit of me that's thinking, actually, I kind of want to get out of the Google ecosystem potentially because stories like this just reinforce my perception that it's a trade that I'm actually not willing to make.
Yeah.
So this looks good for Apple, bad for Facebook. Sorry, bad for Google and Facebook because they're all doing.
Consumer choice is the winner.
Yeah. The interesting one, though, I would just add as a kind of follow up to that is Amazon, because Amazon kind of goes below the radar and doesn't really come in for the same criticism around data privacy.
No.
But I wonder whether perhaps there is some more to that.
Sir Martin Sorrell, before his big disgrace leaving WPP. He
let's word this very carefully.
Yeah, no, but like obviously Montessori, absolute titan of the advertising industry. Mm. And he said at an event I was at a year ago that Amazon was the elephant in the room for the advertising industry, because everyone talks about the duopoly of Google and Facebook and no one talks about Amazon, but yeah. Amazon very quietly are amassing a similar scale in terms of advertising and building up data on people. So it's definitely one worth watching.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Going to go around the room. I've got nothing witty, but I'm just going to say Google or Big Brother.
Yeah. Well, I think probably Big Brother after that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Big Brother.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What's the thing that's happening? The beach thing.
The beach thing. What's the beach? Oh, I don't... Yeah.
Sorry, I'm making a Big Brother correlation about something I have no idea about. That thing that was on all summer that people were watching.
Oh, Love Island.
Oh, Love Island.
Love Island. Okay, yeah.
I was comparing Big Brother to Love Island.
Oh, yeah, okay. I love the way that Scott completely gave up on the format of trying to come up with some sort of rhyme and was like, Google or Big Brother.
Yeah. Google knows everything about you.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a little break and we're going to come back and talk about games.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Lewis.
Hello.
Red Dead 2, everyone's favourite route into in shoot 'em up Western game.
Oh, yes.
It's back. It's coming soon.
Very soon. October 26th.
Yeah. I feel like we've been waiting for this game for about 5 years.
Oh, yeah. I've been waiting for it. Yeah. Since the release of Red Dead Redemption, like, the previous game, yeah. I've been waiting for the follow-up.
Even heard of it.
Wow. Yeah. So I mean, it is a massive... As games go, it's a blockbuster. Yeah. Lewis, for people that aren't aware of it, what is Red Dead 2?
So Red Dead Redemption 2 is an open world Wild West third person shooter game. It's kind of...
sequel.
Yeah, it's a sequel to Red Dead Redemption, but it's actually a prequel.
Oh, cool.
So it's set, previously, which is also very cool because you'll meet the character that you play as in the first one in the second game. Nice little hat tilt. Anyway, you'll go around. You play as Arthur Morgan. He's the head of a gang of bandits on the run across the US. And you just you go around, explore. You can go hunting, you can go shooting. I think all the excitement at the moment is because Rockstar gave us our first proper look at gameplay the other day.
Mm-hmm. It was quite a long sort of YouTube video, wasn't
like
it?
Like a deep dive into kind of a few of the mechanics that they're going to offer, and it's part of a series as well. So there's going to be more releasing in the build up to Red Dead 2.
Nice.
It's just like what happened with GTA 5. Like, they did a similar thing. They released a couple of videos beforehand, building up the hype, and then by the time the launch came, everybody was ready for the game. They knew everything that was going to be available.
Been sufficiently warmed up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So Red Dead is made by Rockstar Games, who made famous for making the Grand Theft Auto series of open world games. They also... one thing that I love about Rockstar is that they love movies and TV. So these games are always heavily sort of pop culture infused. And our colleague Tamlin said when he watched the gameplay video for the new Red Dead Redemption 2, that it looks very much Wild Bunch. You're kind of a gang of bandits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that obviously opens up a huge amount of sort of side quest opportunities, I mean, doesn't it?
That's a huge focus in the second game, is that you're not going to just have the main campaign. Yeah. There's going to be so much more for you to do in the open world. And the thing is with Rockstar, when they make open world games, they make living open world games. Like you play these games and you'll walk along the road and you'll hear people having conversations, and it'll be different every time you go along, depending on where you are, what the person looks like, anything like that. It'll just be something different. You know, I've had GTA for years now, and I'll still play GTA and hear conversations I've never heard before. Yeah.
I think that's incredible. Like when I think, like I was speaking to a gaming developer the other day, and I was kind of asking her a bit about this. Like this, the level of work that goes into these things is just absolutely staggering. Mm-hmm. It's like making it's like making a huge blockbuster series of films or something. Oh, yeah, like it's if anything, possibly even more.
Well, it is more because a film is linear.
Yeah,
but a game has multiple sort of forks that you can go down.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
The other thing to say about this game is that it looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I cannot believe how good looking it is. And the fact that it's the gameplay that was captured the other day was all captured on a PS4 Pro as well. And it was running at 4K. It looked pretty good. The frame rate was decent. So I'm just so ready for the game.
When's it coming out? How much is it going to be? All that stuff.
So it's going to be, it'll be around the £50 mark, depending on where you get it from. So obviously the digital stores will be a little bit more. Amazon will probably get you a little bit cheaper, which is
It's non-exclusive, is it? Is it Xbox and PlayStation?
It's Xbox and PlayStation. No PC at the moment, just like with Grand Theft Auto 5. But as with the other game, I imagine it will be out on PC within a year or so. Mm. They just need a little bit more time to make it as beautiful as it can be.
Yeah. Well, you know, being set in sort of the old West, you've got a lot of sort of running creeks, mountains, dappled sunlight, that sort of thing.
This is what I mean. You've got
how I like my sunlight.
Yeah.
They're really putting a focus on how varied the environment is in this game. Because, I mean, Red Dead Redemption was a great game, but it was a lot of the same kind of landscape.
It's quite flat.
Yeah, quite flat and dead.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, you've got, like sprawling kind of mountain ranges, and like you've got like built cities, and you've got like forests, swamps, and snow, and rain, and heat, and you got everything. Day night cycles. Like it's a fully living game, as far as I'm concerned. And I think one of the coolest features that not really anyone's talking about is the contextual replies that you can do in Red Dead Redemption 2. So as you're going around the world, you'll see events happening. Like it could be someone being robbed, it could be someone having a fight, whatever. And you can choose how you respond to that. It'll give you a bunch of contextual answers, and then you can choose to escalate the situation. You can try to de-escalate the situation and talk them out of it. So if you're being arrested by the police, you can try and talk yourself out of it, or you can intimidate witnesses into not reporting you.
Is that from like a selection of responses?
It's depending on the situation, there'll be different responses.
I used to play a game, this is slightly on a tangent, sorry, but I used to play a game called Starship Titanic, which I loved, where you essentially just could say whatever you wanted to say. That was really cool. I quite enjoyed that. It was actually, I think it was quite far ahead of its time. Yeah. It was influenced by Douglas Adams. It was a great game. But you could pretty much come up with any response you liked, and I quite like the freedom of
this. Is what I mean. Yeah, I think it's going to open a lot of doors and kind of tons of storytelling and the experiences that people have, because I think that one of the key things is that with open world games, everybody's experience is going to be different depending on what they're doing, where they are, and stuff like that. So yeah, games like this where they give you the opportunity to make your own story as well as follow the beautifully crafted story that Rockstar have created.
I think that's one thing that they're definitely trying to get across, is that you're going to go through kind of a character arc of your own choosing here. Yeah. You can decide to be a complete arsehole, or you can decide to maybe be like, you know, the lovable gangster. You can sort of make those decisions.
Yeah, the way they made it sound, it sounds like there'll be pivotal points in the story where you'll decide whether to kill someone or to save them, and then that will have a knock-on effect on relationships with others. And
in my experience, Rockstar don't reward you for taking the nice guy route, because you often let the guy live, and then that guy will come back and bite you in the ass.
You're really selling. You're really selling this game to me, actually, and I'll be working from home soon, so
I'm tempted to take about a week off work around
it. Sounds really good,
just to dive into it and just get some solid time on
it. My brother's just taken a week off work to play the new World of Warcraft.
Smart. Brilliant. Smart. Do you know though, I do miss that. Like I remember because I used to play GTA, and then there was that game I mentioned, the Starship Titanic game, and like Black and White, and I don't know, Half-Life was on a page while, and Unreal Tournament. And so I used to actually be a really big gamer, but for whatever reason, as an adult woman, I just never seem to have any
life
time.
Life gets in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's a great thing to do. And if you have the time, then it's like, it's just such a piece of pure escapism to play a good game.
Yeah,
so.
You know, you got the, I'll disappear for like 3 or 4 hours and I will not be here anymore. I will be in that game. I will be in the Wild West or riding my horse around, you know, hunting and shooting people and doing whatever. Yeah. And then when I'm done.
That's a new resolution. I'm going to make time and play some kind of game this year.
Nice. I think everybody should.
Yeah.
We've been extremely glowing about this game and with good reason, because I think it's probably going to be absolutely brilliant. But is there any negatives? Has there been any bad press? I think one thing to say outright is that this is very much a slow burn of a game. Like, don't expect to sort of get in and get out in 20, 30 hours.
No, I think it's just, like with GTA, it's going to have a lot to do. And I think they haven't announced it yet, but there's a lot of rumours that there's going to be some kind of online element, just like with GTA Online, which will really make it last. Because like with GTA 5, you know, the campaign was long. You had a lot to do. But within about 50 hours, you'd done a lot that was in the game.
It's a small point as well, but with Red Dead, you don't have cars.
No.
So everything takes a little bit longer. Yeah. The world's a bit bigger. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of kind of just riding around.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how they get around there, if they offer any kind of fast travel system.
Maybe a train.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they have got trains. Yeah, trains are coming. But no, I think in terms of games coming out in 2018, for anybody that's remotely interested in games, this is the one to watch out for.
Well, I'd say this and The Last of Us.
Oh, The Last of Us,
Last of Us Part 2. Yeah.
But then that's not this year. They haven't announced a release
that
yet, no.
Do you play a lot of games, Scott?
I don't. So right. I used to.
It's a similar kind of story to me then. It
I still play sport games. Yeah. So I still play FIFA and Madden and NBA 2K, because you can sort of get in and get out in under half an hour. Which tends to be the window of gaming that I get these days.
I went the other week to my mate's house, because I used to have a very beloved Dreamcast when I was younger. Oh. And I went over to his and we played Soul Calibur for like a good 2 hours. And it was just so much fun. But it's become a bit of a, I don't know how to put it, a niche cultish thing now, the Dreamcast. He was saying like how much he'd bought it for and stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, so there is still a market for these kind of retro games.
People, I think there's like a retro gaming revolution at the moment. Like, I've seen a lot of companies, kind of like Atari, is bringing out like old school consoles, and you get a lot of these third party ones that will kind of combine like 400 retro games into one little handheld for you.
And it's quite nice. It's like a little trip down memory lane. I really enjoyed it.
People are here for it.
But in short, I am dying to play this game. I just need to find a way to have enough time to play it.
Me too.
Cool. I don't think we need to go around the room, but I'm going to do it anyway. Red Dead or Dead Red?
Red Dead.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I've heard, Red Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be very good for you.
Karen's like, I'm going to opt out of this ridiculous format.
The last game I played was Monkey Island.
Excellent.
Cool. Take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about the iMac. Karen, 20 years of the iMac.
Yep.
Time flies.
It sure does. The iMac arrived, or went on sale on the 15th of August, 1998. A year after Steve Jobs came back to Apple.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the timeline of Jobs here?
So he basically came back in 1997, and he was like interim CEO and all of that. And then that was his first big project, really. So the iMac became, well, probably the most successful product for years for Apple. So the design icon, you know, available in Bondi blue, dramatically different to any other PC available at the time. Everything was beige boxes, and as Apple sort of promoted the colours of the iMac and so on. The name, I thought that was quite an interesting story, because Steve Jobs wanted to call it the Mac Man at the time, and he had the Walkman, and it was that sort of, you know, to us, it just sounds like such a rubbish name.
Definitely. They definitely picked the right one.
That was the idea of Ken Segal, who was one of the ad agency at the time. And he actually had quite a battle with Steve Jobs to get him to agree to that as the name.
It's interesting, because people always sort of paint Steve Jobs as being sort of almost infallible in retrospect. But then you look at things like that and you realise... Yeah. A lot of these decisions, it can never just be one person.
I did, a few years ago, I actually met Ken Segal at an event, and from what he was sort of saying, it made me think that with Steve Jobs, it was very much a case of trying to get him to feel that it was his idea.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so that's
interesting. I'm sure that's how they sort of went about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the I in iMac was signifying internet, and at the time it was the very early infancy of the internet actually coming to like normal people at home. And the interesting thing was that when the iMac went on sale on the 15th of August 1998, it became the number one PC that Christmas, and 32% of people who were buying the Mac, the iMac, it was their first ever computer.
So I remember, I do just about remember this. Like, I remember it kind of appearing in friends' houses and being like, oh my God, your parents are so cool. and thinking that it was like this great object of desire. Yeah. And so,
And it certainly made an impression, because after the iMac designer, of course, it was designed by Jonathan Ives, who's a Brit, Sir Jonathan Ives.
Yes.
You know, you had all these copycat designs, not in terms of computers back then, but you know, all these sort of devices coming out with a clear plastic, so you could see the components on the inside. Also interesting, I thought, was the fact that when the iMac first went on sale, it cost $1,224. Which actually isn't that far off what it costs now.
Yeah, so but with inflation.
Then you consider inflation. So in today's money, that's $1,923.
Yeah, okay. Still fairly affordable. That's still not that bonkers for what you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah.
You know, if you were spending that much on an iMac now, you'd get a very, very good iMac.
Yes, yeah.
But it is worth saying that this was a time when not everyone had a PC. It was still very much a hobbyist market, wasn't it?
It was going to be your rich friends buying one.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. We didn't have one.
No.
It wasn't just about design as well. You know, one of the things that the iMac lacked when it launched was a floppy drive. And everyone was like, oh my God, it's not got a floppy drive. It makes the whole like USB-C thing.
Because
the fact that it didn't have a floppy drive, you couldn't actually print unless you had a dongle, basically, or whatever they called them back then, so that you could plug in printer with the old-fashioned ports, because I think there was the first HP printers come out of a USB, didn't come out until a few months later.
So
at the time everyone was like, oh my god, outraged by it, doesn't have
this. So Apple's been really making everyone crazy with its like port choices for quite a long time.
Courage, you know.
It is courage.
It is courage.
Was the iMac the first Apple PC, or was that the one that was named after his daughter but not named after his daughter?
Oh well, no, there was the Lisa before. Some of the features of the Lisa did actually come into the iMac.
Because was the Lisa the first one that had a mouse, point and click?
I would have to
Scott always asks the easy questions on these.
That's what I do.
I know.
The Macintosh had been around for a while before, and that could have been there were people at home who would have had a Macintosh, and they did have the UI and all of that. So I don't think the iMac was the first in terms of those features, but the Lisa certainly brought some of those features to a sort of more consumer audience, but at a higher price.
Yeah,
I think it was just the design, though. That's the thing that's so groundbreaking, because it took Apple from my impression anyway, kind of helped establish them as they're seen now as being the pinnacle of kind of beautiful.
Design.
This is it. They weren't the first, but they were the best.
But they did it really well. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Because of course, the iMac, when it first launched, was available in Bondi Blue, but then over the sort of next couple of years, they brought out all sorts of different colours. So you had blueberry, lime, strawberry, grape, tangerine, and then later on indigo, ruby, graphite, snow. The ones I remember the most are the flower power and blue Dalmatian.
Oh, brilliant.
Which were quite...
Why isn't someone doing that now? I'd love to have a computer with... not just a boring kind of black or grey colour.
We did that a few years ago with the iPhone 5C. They brought the colourful range, and then they just killed it straight back off again.
And I think that's such a shame, because I think they're quite...
I love a colourful phone.
Yeah, like more colour in the world is a good thing.
Other Android companies are all doing really colourful phones these days, and they just look so good. And I'd love like a blue iPhone 10 or like a red iPhone 10.
I've got a nice blue Sony Xperia, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's it's not necessarily the most exciting phone in the world. But yeah, I mean, perhaps now that companies are becoming a bit more worried about blue light on the actual phone screen, maybe they might brighten up the rest of the phone and dim down the screen. I don't know. I mean, probably not.
The design sort of by when would that have been? 20 2002-ish, I think, was when they brought out the angle-poised lamp version. So basically, they went from having that big CRT monitor with the clear plastic to an LCD monitor on top of this sort of bulb below. And that design only lasted a couple of years, but it was kind of like, if you think about at the time they wanted to bring out the LCD, that was the only way they could do it. And it was a couple of years later that they designed it so that you could have everything behind the screen. And the next big change there came when the aluminium version arrived. Although actually, I skipped something there, because in 2006 you had the Intel Switch, which was a big deal as well. It didn't change the design of the iMac, but the fact that it had the Intel chip inside, from Apple's perspective, meant they had to rewrite and use Rosetta and everything else. But
yeah,
you know, it could have been, if that hadn't have happened, you know, who knows where the iMac would be today. So yeah, then you had the aluminium iMac. Few years later, they slimmed that down, and when they slimmed the aluminium iMac down, they removed the CD drive. And I brought that back because it was like, it's the floppy drive all over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, Apple's desire to make it look great often comes at the expense of certain things that we all think we really need.
But it's funny though, because, you know, because I've got on my PC at home, I remember at the time, because we got this 4 years ago. In fact, my other half kind of essentially built it for us, which likes to go on and on about to anyone that will listen to him. Bless him. But I was like, oh, do we really need a CD drive? I at the time, he was like, do we need one? And I was like, oh yeah, but it might be nice to have it in case. I've never put anything in it ever. So actually, Apple, although it does make people furious, and I understand, a lot of the time they can be quite prescient about what people will actually need. It's a bit like the kind of, if you ask people what they want, they'll say a faster horse. It's like that old quote. Like, Apple sometimes understands that what people think they want and what they're actually going to use in future can be quite different.
I mean, Steve Jobs famously didn't agree with the idea of using focus groups, because he felt that people will tell you they want one thing, but really they don't want
that. It's funny, because in a way it's I kind of really dislike that way of looking at things, because when you talk to people that work in like UX or whatever, you know, you do have to look at what users are doing. But then on the other hand, I think the difference is that if you do that, you will only ever get incremental improvement.
You're
never going to completely revolutionise something, which is where his approach, despite probably being part of the product of his overall slightly unpleasant personality, probably did work. They probably needed to have that.
Sometimes
approach.
You have to make those difficult decisions.
And big picture, the iMac really kind of set off the golden age of Apple, didn't it? It's kind of launched that period of design where Jobs just, like, the Apple stock price, which was absolutely on the floor, just went up and up and up, and the company kind of had its renaissance.
You know, you had the iMac, and then you had the iPod, and then you had the iPhone, and
and now it's the most valuable company in the world.
Yeah,
so
$1 trillion. And next, apparently, you know, the next big things are going to be the car and all of these things. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for listening this week. We will be back next week for, I think, our 100th show.
Ooh.
We're getting very, very close. So thank you. If you enjoyed this, remember to like, tell your friends, subscribe, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.